So I understand that you've been consecutively studying Bhagavad Gita, and you finished. You finished chapter 8.
Chapter 8.
So if I ask you some questions on chapter 8, you'll be able to answer, right? Who would like to? In 3 or 4 sentences, besides Devakinandan, who would like to summarize Krishna's message of chapter 8? What is the subject matter of chapter 8? Okay.
Actually, in chapter 7 is the ending, and chapter 8 is starting. At the end of chapter 7, Krishna says, you know, that I am who controls this material world, and the yajnas and the offerings and the demigods. So that's where the chapter 7 ends. And in chapter 8, it starts with 8 different questions from Arjuna, you know. Who's the Adi?
We're not on the detail. I'm looking for an executive summary.
Okay,
high level summary. Go ahead.
Yeah, high level summary says that Lord Krishna says that whatever a person thinks while he leaves his body, that's what he achieves.
That's in chapter 7 or chapter 8?
Chapter 8.
Okay, just checking.
And then he says how a person can achieve, you know, how he can remember.
How he can get to that stage of remembering Krishna.
That's the most important
thing. Most important thing.
And then he also discusses about if you don't remember him, then you keep going in the material world infinitely.
And therefore...
Even Lord Brahma is like not...
Therefore... Remember Krishna.
Yes, we should always remember. Think of Krishna and our forget.
Okay. Anybody want it? Not too much, but you know, like a little sentence or two to add to that? Yes.
Yeah, basically, Arjuna asked in the beginning of chapter 8 questions, 5 of which were related to Adibhauta, what is Adibhauta, and then the 8th question is about that, how can one remember you at the time of death? Yeah. So Krishna talks about how to remember death
the
rest of the chapter.
Okay.
And then in the chapter, like he says, like how mystic yogis, liberated persons, what all they have to do to remember it, how they have to leave at certain time to actually...
Mechanically.
Yeah. Like when the moon is charged, and then how difficult for them to choose certain, like how it is so particular, so that they can remember Krishna. And for devotees, how easy it is, like if he's always engaging Krishna consciousness.
So tell me how easy it is.
Like the Prabhupada says, like when we are alive, we practice devotional service, and we are situated in transcendence, so that at the time of death, we are. Prepared. We are already Krishna conscious before even we face death. So we practice our devotional service like that. So devotee doesn't have to get it.
Okay, very nice. I've learned a lot this evening. Any other point someone would like to add? You want to add something? No, just scratching. Okay. Yes?
I mean, we also touched upon Yogamishra Bhakti and Shuddha Bhakti, different type of Bhakti.
Okay.
Jnana Mishra Bhakti, Yogamishra Bhakti, out of which Shuddha Bhakti, which is the ultimate most.
Okay. What's your favorite one?
Shuddha Bhakti.
And it's easy, right?
Yeah.
Just ask Krishna, it's easy. Anything else anybody want to add?
Brahma's
Brahma's
like he discusses about Brahma's one day, how supreme.
How long is Brahma's life?
Life and all. Before he establishes his abode supremacy, he discusses about the highest living being, Brahma, how is the duration of life and how we are annihilated, and when a diet of Brahma.
Okay. He also discusses about his own abode very briefly. He touches that.
What does he say about his own abode?
It's like there is the anitya, like it's always, I mean, it's nitya there, it's always, though it's unmanifested, but it always remains constant. Where is the material world keeps changing all the time?
Okay, contrasting the two.
Yeah.
And so his abode is non changing,
yeah,
and the rest is always changing, including Brahma's abode. Yeah.
This world is under Ashoka, and there are very few people
here.
Very few
what?
Who will reach to the abode of Krishna? They are very sudurlabha, very rare in this world.
Okay. You're going to be one of them?
No.
No. Yes.
Krishna also says that how should one meditate him? That, that he is the oldest of the oldest, and he is the maintainer of all the living entities, and he is the smallest. He is telling himself so that the devotees can remember him and meditate upon him at the time of death.
The Mahavishnu Goswami, we would be saying this kind of the elder, that was one of his favorite verses. He would love to speak on that verse. He would speak on that verse, and then the next time he'd speak on that verse, the next time he'd speak on it. And he'd speak on that verse. He really liked that verse. It's meditation on Krishna.
We talked about Omkar. Krishna says, I am Om. My sound representation is Om. Also, Prabhupada explains that, okay, just chanting Om is not the actual thing. Actually, Krishna says,
not sufficient.
Not sufficient, because Krishna
says, it is a thing, but it's not sufficient.
Yeah, it's a good thing, but not sufficient. But
more than a good thing is Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Krishna says, you need chant and think of me, Mam Anusaram. So, for that, you need to chant Hare Krishna Maga Mantra, which will keep you remembering, keep us remembering Krishna always.
Okay. You're good students.
I think you have to, for chanting Omkara, you have to think between the eyebrows, you know, certain ways of how to chant Omkara, between the two eyebrows, with the life hair in between.
What do you have, only one? Anyway, okay. It's mechanical and not easy, and the other's easy, in other words, giving some examples. Okay, let's move on to chapter 9. Chapter 8 is called, you know the title of the chapter? Attaining the Supreme. Attaining the Supreme. So chapter 9 is the most confidential knowledge. So, what's so confidential about it if Krishna's disclosing it? It's a kind of confidential knowledge that even you disclose it and remains confidential. One kind of confidential is,
don't tell anybody.
That's one kind of confidential. Then another kind of confidential is that which is very personal, very dear to you. So, confidential knowledge is that which is most dear to you, or very dear to you. And that's the soul, because that's who we are. So confidential knowledge is knowledge of who you are. And so knowledge of the soul. And knowledge of the distinction between the soul and that which isn't the soul, or knowledge which leads to liberation. That's confidential knowledge. And Krishna discloses confidential knowledge very early in Bhagavad Gita. first thing he does. And then Krishna discloses more confidential knowledge. What's more confidential than confidential? Confidential knowledge is to understand our real identity is soul, distinct from matter. Most people don't know that, or they theoretically say it, but they really don't have that knowledge. A survey, I remember this very clearly, in the year 2000, they did surveys on all kinds of things. One was how many people in America, or percentage of persons in America, believe in the soul, the eternality of the soul. New Jersey was one of the main places they, like, you know, midstream America, they surveyed. And the percentage was something in the close to 90%. You know, then one could ask the question, that's interesting, how many people live their life as if they have that conviction? But they say they have that conviction. And then, you know, life after death was another, almost the same, like in the high 80s. My point there is, this is transcendental knowledge, not just, you know, concepts or theoretical. Krishna's imparting to Arjuna and to the qualified reader the realization of the understanding, deeper understanding, if one hears properly. And we'll hear a little bit about that at the beginning of chapter 9. Qualifications for receiving that which Krishna is giving. So, more confidential is to make a distinction between the individual soul and the supreme soul, because there are some that understand there is Brahman, but they don't understand there is Parabrahman. So there's more confidential knowledge to understand that there's a supreme being beyond us living beings. And the living beings are distinct from matter. That's more confidential knowledge. And most confidential knowledge is acting in that relationship or devotional service. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, although paramaguhyam, the knowledge is said to be most confidential, actually the way that we should understand the word knowledge in this case is devotional service itself. He's imparting devotional service or knowledge of devotional service specifically. Most confidential knowledge is devotional service. He's imparting devotional service. So when the soul intimately connects in love and devotion and service to the Supreme Soul, that's chapter 9. Now, how many chapters are there in Bhagavad Gita? What's the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Let's see if the children. I know the adults know. I'm just like trying to keep audience attention going here. Do you know how many chapters are in Bhagavad Gita? How many chapters? What's the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Chapter 18. Okay. So what's 18 divided by 3? 6. Very good. So 6 and 6 and 6 makes 18. Right? So, the very middle part of Bhagavad Gita is the middle six chapters. And the very middle of those six chapters ends with chapter 9, the end of chapter 9 and the beginning of chapter 10. It's like the balancing point of the whole Bhagavad Gita, the central message of the whole Bhagavad Gita. As you shared, where chapter 7 begins, it's a response to Krishna's making the statement at the end of chapter 6, where of all the different systems of yoga, one is the topmost form of yoga. And that topmost form of yoga has two parts to it, essentially. Who knows the last verse? Don't blurt it out, just raise your hand. Who knows the last verse of chapter 6? Oh, no, don't blurt it out. Yes, sir. What does Madgate Nantaratmana mean?
Mind concentrated on me.
Ah, very good. So in devotional service, there's something that the essential is your mind or your consciousness is fixed upon Krishna, Madgate Nantaratmana. And then there's another part. What is Shraddhavan Bhajate Yoma? What does that mean?
With complete faith.
And with complete faith, what?
Bhajate means
devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna with complete faith. So it's something the mind does and something our working and knowledge acquiring senses do. Both. Elsewhere Krishna says, always engage, always think of me and engage in your prescribed duty, and always engage in your prescribed duty. So these two things, the mind and the working and knowledge acquiring senses. Practical activity, Prabhupada says in the group word. So in the beginning of 7, Krishna says, I'm going to explain how. How to. It's a how-to section. It's devotional service. So Chapter 9 is also devotional service. Chapter 12 is devotional service. It's like devotional service, bhakti yoga. And to understand a thing properly, one needs to understand both what it is and what it isn't. Or both. Something, good definition is both inclusive and exclusive. Like supposing you're going to go to India. Wouldn't it be nice to go to India? Maybe, go to India for Christmas. And I ask you, could you, when you go to India, could you bring back a mridanga? No, don't, wait a minute. But supposing you don't know what a mridanga is, you do. But supposing you don't, you would say, well, what is it? I'm going to give you a definition. Well, it's a drum. And don't get the wooden ones, get the clay ones. That's what it is, and it's not a wooden one. And it doesn't have one end, it has two ends. But it's not the two ends, or the two ends are the same size. One is small and the other is big. So slowly by what it is and what it isn't, you get clarity of what a thing is. Inclusive and exclusive. Both must be there for a comprehensive definition. Think of what Rupa Goswami does to describe, or the principal verse that explains what the whole of nectar devotion is. It's one verse, because nectar devotion is about devotion. So it says what devotion isn't, and it says what devotion is. Krishna does the same thing in this chapter, what devotional service isn't. That is, he does similar in chapter 7, where demigod worship and impersonal conception of the Supreme are identified as what devotional service isn't, just like Shuddha Bhakti. There's different types of bhakti. Remember? Karma Mishra Bhakti, Yoga Mishra Bhakti, and Shuddha Bhakti. So he does the same thing here. In the 9th chapter, what devotional service is and what devotional service isn't. And he ends with, the last verse of the chapter, which is the one verse that, at least the beginning part, is the only verse that's repeated twice in Bhagavad Gita. manmana, bhava man bhaktam, you know the verse? Madhyaji mam namaskuru, you know that one? You know that one? Okay. You know the verse. Go ahead. Slowly. Atmana matparayana, what does that mean? Atmanam? Atma? Huh? Yeah, soul. Matparayana. When matparayana. Well, what you just say the translation. You know what the translation is? And?
Always keep me.
Madhyaji worships me. Mam namaskuru offers her obeisances to me. Then? But where is it in English? What's the translation? You don't know. Oh, okay. Okay. Somebody know? Matparayana. Atmana matparayana. You have the answer back there, or you're...
No, sorry. Okay. So I'm thinking about other... the verse where he is very dear to me. And
matparayana. So...
it's for me. Matparayana is for me.
Yeah.
Dedicated to me.
Yes, dedicated to me. So, such a great soul, it has this qualification. It's very dedicated to me. They're situated in me. So, and Krishna accepts one who is so dedicated to him. So they're interconnected very nicely. But that's the conclusion of the chapter. And what makes up devotional service? So I was thinking, all of this is like a warm-up, now we'll have the class. I was thinking to do an overview of chapter 9, but it's, you know, there's too much to do it justice. It would be, I was thinking instead, just cover, do prepare us to think of the chapter, and then cover through verse 10, first 10 verses. So, the first three verses are, like the little Mahima section, the glories of the message of the chapter, and also the qualifications of one to receive the message of the chapter, and the disqualifications, again, inclusive, exclusive. So, Krishna indicates to Arjuna, he declares, what I'm going to describe to you now is more confidential than anything else. And you can understand it because, so this is a qualification, you're not envious. And another is the emphasis on the process of hearing. Tatrinu, hear from me. And there's, it's almost a, does anybody have a Bhagavad Gita? Hey, one Bhagavad Gita, please. One Bhagavad Gita coming up. Very good. So, chapter 7, Krishna says, I am going to explain. In chapter 9, Krishna says, hear from me. He's repeating himself, it's just, you know, different manner of expression of the same thing, the importance of the hearing process. So one has to hear, one has to be free from envy, and also when you value something, you pay more attention to that something than you something you don't value so much. So he wants Arjuna to understand and wants us to understand what the subject matter of this chapter that you're going to be spending your next period of time studying is extremely valuable. It's the most valuable. It's not only here's Krishna, but here's how to enter into your relationship with Krishna that's unmixed with yoga and gyan and karma. Of course, elsewhere the same message is presented. It's not Krishna held that a secret before. But now it's going to be very explicitly described. And then another very famous verse, Raja Vidya. Let's say it together. Raja Vidya Rajagoyam Avitram Idam Uttamam Pratyaksham Avagabam Dharmyam Susukam Kartam Avyayam. These are glories. Again, this is the Mahima section. It's most confidential knowledge, Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a nice explanation. He said, it's the knowledge of kings, and it's the confidential way that kings keep things confidential. So kings have their ministers, and they speak, you know, in public settings in so many different ways, but they speak in very confidential ways with their ministers. They have their royal treasury, but they don't hang their royal treasury out at the front gate. They keep the royal treasury very safely guarded. But they know what's in the royal treasury. So the kings, saintly kings, qualified kings, they act in a kingly manner. They give protection to their citizens. But there's something that a saintly king that inspires that saintly king. And that's their saintly king is their devotion to the Supreme. He's the representative of God. And so it's that which saintly kings have, which I'm now going to disclose. Very nice way of saying it. Pavitram idam uttamam. There are things that are pure, and this is the most pure. Pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam. Pratyaksha is direct sense perception. As directly as we can perceive each other, one can perceive reality with a capital R, or perceive the soul. One can perceive Krishna through the medium of devotional service. One can directly perceive the self with a small s and a capital S. And this becomes very important with the next set of verses, because there's a feature of Krishna. Refer back to this again, but there's a feature of Krishna called his avyakta murti. Vyakta and avyakta, manifest and unmanifest. So there's an unmanifest form. Well, the unmanifest form of Krishna is Krishna, but worldly people can't see, and so it's unmanifest. They can only see through the eye of devotion. Like that very famous verse from Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Santaksadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti Yam Shama Sundaram Achincha Gunasurupam Godindamadi Purusham Hamaham Rajami. The commentary by Bhaktisiddhanta is really nice. To say it in a simple language, when one attains the stage of bhava, that bhava stage, there's feelings of ecstatic feelings towards the object, towards Krishna. There's the subject, the devotee, and there's the object, Krishna. And one feels ecstatic feelings towards the object, Krishna. And it's that bhava, that's the anjana, or the ointment, that smears the eyes of the soul proper, as you could say, spiritual eyes. That it's through the medium of bhava that one can then ecstatically see Krishna Yam Shyama Sundaram Akincha Guna Swarupam. Or same as what's in this chapter 9, is Avyakta Murti. Through devotional service, in the very advanced stage of bhava and prema, one can see Krishna. And otherwise, he's not manifest. He's there, but not manifest. Just like Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. There's, when those pastimes are manifest, like in scheduled incarnations, Krishna comes and he performs his pastimes in Vrindavan. And then there's after he leaves. So here's a quiz question. Is Krishna in Vrindavan or did Krishna leave Vrindavan? Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, how come we can't see Krishna when we go to Vrindavan? Because our eyes aren't, our spiritual eyes, our the soul is not smeared with the ointment of bhava, of Krishna. Bhava and prema stage, that anjana is missing. So through the medium of devotional service, only can Krishna be understood. Now this is, you know, this is one level of understanding, but it's the understanding, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, it's devotional service. In other words, you can have a scholar read chapter 9 Bhagavad Gita and not get it. We're practicing devotees who can read Bhagavad Gita and get it a little bit. Like, a little bit. Enough to keep us going. But if we apply ourselves very, very carefully to the process of bhakti yoga, including hearing, because that's something that's described in this first chapter, all misgivings are taken away. All contaminations of heart are taken away just by the process of hearing from the proper source, in the proper attitude, in the non-envious attitude. And then in the third verse, Krishna speaks of the necessity of having faith. Because he says it in the converse. Those that don't have faith, they'll never understand. So, being non-envious and being faithful and hearing very carefully from the right source. This jewel of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, has all these wonderful things described in the second verse. Can we just cover the first three verses? Now, 4, 5, and 6. The subject matter is going to be devotional service. Now here's a practical consideration. We're in this sea of matter. Any direction you look, look up, look down, look to the left, look to the right, look in front of you, look behind you, and any direction you look, there's matter. How can you engage in devotional service to Krishna in this sea of matter? There has to be some description or some clarity, you can even say some justification, for utilizing matter in devotional service. Because impersonalists say, that's a no-no. You have to be a renunciate, and a very strict renunciate at that, in order to even begin to come close to Brahman, and otherwise forget it. You're a hopeless case, isn't it? That's what the teaching of Shankaracharya is. So, they easily give some embellishments to that, but Krishna is, in this little section, giving the philosophical justification for devotional service in the sea of matter. The spirit soul that we heard about, you know, in the confidential knowledge section. Now looking at the more confidential knowledge, how to interact within the two in the sea of matter. So what's the relationship between Krishna and matter that justifies devotional service? You with me? That's the subject. And in short, there is this relationship that Lord Chaitanya speaks of explicitly. Krishna is also speaking of it explicitly, of Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. Do you know what Achintya Veda Veda Tattva is? You've heard of it before, right? Can you say what it is? You're not sure. Not sure. Okay. Let me help you. So, besides putting you on the spot, maybe this is something you'll carry home with you tonight. Achintya means inconceivable. Chintya is that which you can conceive of. Achintya, that which the mind, it's beyond the mind to conceive of. Stretch the mind as far as like elastic, just keep stretching it and stretching it, and it will never reach Krishna, because there's a verse in Brahma Samhita that says that. Because Krishna is beyond the mind, he's achintya, inconceivable. The power of the mind can't reach Krishna. Then Veda and Abheda. Veda means different and Abheda means non-different. Just like the name of Krishna is non-different than Krishna, correct? You know the verse from Harinam Chintami that says that? Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnashuddho Nityamukto Abhinatvam Namanamino. You got the verse. Abhinatvam. Tvam is having the quality of, or like ness, like consciousness. So, tvam means ness, and abhina means non-different. Having the quality of non-difference. Abhinatvam Nama Namino. The name, the object named. So that as the name Krishna is non-different than the object named, that's abhinna. So now Krishna, in relation to the material world, he's saying, well, Jyoti Chaitanya is saying, there's a relationship between Krishna and this world. And it's non-different than him, and it's different from him at the same time. That's beyond the mind, because the mind is a binary processor. You've heard of that? Computers, binary processor. One or a zero?
Yeah.
You're a little better at that. So the mind is like that. It's either like, you know, there's a light switch. Well, there's a dimmer switch. So there's a light switch over there. It's on or it's off. It's on or it's off. It's not on and off. It's on or it's off. That's a binary switch. The mind is like that. It's either this or that. It can't be this and that. See, it's a that, or it's this, or it's that, but it's not both. So it's inconceivable that Krishna is both non-different than his creation, matter, and he's different from the creation. Let's see what Krishna says. This is Achintya Veda Veda Tattva philosophy, right in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 4. By me, in my unmanifested form, we spoke about that, Avyaktamurti, like Krishna and Vrindavan that we can't see unless we're pure devotees. Then we can see. Well, Krishna's in the heart, but we can't see, but if you're pure devotee, you can see. He's everywhere. Like Prahlad Maharaj was asked by Hiranyakashipu, where is Vishnu? He's everywhere. Oh! He's in this pillar. Yes, Father, he's everywhere. I told you he's everywhere. He's in the pillar, he's everywhere. Ah! He's everywhere. So that's his unmanifested form. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me. Right? All beings are in me. But I am not in them. Okay. Then he goes on to say, yet everything that is created does not rest in me. this I call this Upanishadic double talk. Everything is in me, everything is not in me. It's on or it's off. That's inconceivable. But it's relationship between Krishna and his material energy. Behold my mystic power. So here's another concept besides his unmanifested form. It's his mystic power. Yogam Aishvaryam. Aishvarya means opulence. His mystic opulence. It's mystical. He's everything is in him and everything is not in him. Indeed, not in him means he has his own identity. He's in Krishna Loka. And he's not circuit overload worrying about all the things that all living entities are up to in the mature world. Although by his expansion as Paramatma, he's within everything and he knows everything of all living entities. By his expansion, he's within everything and he's not within everything. Everything is within him and everything is not within him. His mystic opulence. Although I'm the maintainer of all living entities and although I'm everywhere, I'm not a part of the cosmic manifestation. For my self with a capital S is the very source of creation. So there's this is the creation. There's a relationship between the creation and Krishna in that it doesn't exist except for the fact that it comes from him, like the sun and the sunshine. They're inseparable. Anybody see any shine anywhere without a sun or a sun without shine? They're inseparable. But the shine is not the sun. Matter is not Krishna. There are people that say that. Nature is God. It's called pantheism. Nature is God. Like the personal feature of God just disappears and nature is God. It's incomplete. Nature is part of God's energy and he's the energetic, but he has his own existence. It is dependent upon him. He is not dependent upon it. Then he gives a nice example, like fascinating example, through a metaphor. What a metaphor is? Tell me.
It's a comparison without using the word like or as.
Very good. Learn that in English? Metaphor. So metaphor is, so something that's known is used to explain something that's unknown. And something that's known is the sky and the wind that blows in the sky. That's something we know. So like, comparison, using like or as, there's the wind that's blowing in the sky. So as the wind is blowing in the sky, what happens with the sky? Nothing. Because the sky is more subtle than the wind. The wind is blowing. The sky is not moved at all because it's more subtle. Similarly, Krishna is the sky and the features of his material energy are moving. But he's not moving. There's no transformation in Krishna. Like, there's no transformation in the sky when the wind is blowing. So, Krishna encompasses everything. And everything is within him. And it's everything that is moved. He's not changed. And specifically also about the living entity. This Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains. The living entities, here's the universe. And it has layers that are really big. And inside there's the space, or Akash, and then there's planets that are moving within the universe. Then there's living entities that are moving within the universe too, up and down and so forth. So they have that capacity to move within some range. There's some freedom, but it's not independent, although they may think they're independent. we may think we're independent. We're bound. We're limited by that space, just like the wind can't go beyond space. Anyways, besides the fact that it's one is grosser and the other is more subtle, just like, you know, within the universe, that's it. That's space. So we have some freedom. We have minute independence, but we're actually absolutely dependent, even for that minute independence. We have a relationship. Both matter and spirit have the relationship with the source of emanation. And both are situated within Krishna, like the wind is moving within the sky or space, that Krishna is unaffected. Our existence is dependent upon Him, Krishna's existence is independent. Although there's this oneness and difference relationship between the two. So I've lectured on these verses that took like 3 days. So we're just doing an overview. So it's a very deep subject matter. Just touching on the subject matter. There's a relationship. It justifies devotional service. So we can use the mridanga and kartals and microphone and computers and stuff. We can use stuff, material energy, in service to Krishna. And it's transcendental. Why? Because it has a relationship with Krishna. There's a the longest chapter, maybe in the whole of the Bhagavatam, at least it's the longest chapter in Canto 10 of the Bhagavatam, is chapter 87, Prayers by the Personified Vedas. And if you like using a dictionary and like scratching your head and contemplating deep subject matters, read chapter 87 of Canto 10. Because it's a very, very profound and very important, like this is also, subject. The beginning of there's 89 chapters in Canto 10. So it's the end. Krishna's, Maharaj Pariksit has heard the whole 9 cantos and everything about Krishna's pastimes. And it's like, you know, the Bhagavatam could have ended right there. And Maharaj Pariksit is expressing ecstatic mood. He says, I'm ready for anything. Having heard from you this message of Krishna, I'm ready for, let that mystical snake, bird, or whatever it is, come. Now I'm ready. My mind is fixed upon you. My mind is fixed upon you. But then he raises a doubt. His doubt is, how did it happen? Like some of the earlier discussions, like how to get to the position where this unmixed devotion. He asked Shukadeva Goswami, how did it happen? Because just consider, for all this duration, almost 7 days now have passed, and all that's been going on is something material, the tongue, is moving, and something material, the ear, is receiving that sound. So material and material, how do we get to this spiritual place with material and material? It's related to these three verses, 4 through 6 in chapter 9. And Shukadeva Goswami says, wonderful question. This is such a wonderful question, it was discussed long, long ago. Many sages, they were discussing this question. And when they were discussing the question, they said, oh, this is such a wonderful discussion. It was discussed long, long ago. In other words, a classic question. And the four Kumaras were discussing with the personified Vedas. And it's really deep. When the four Kumaras and the personified Vedas get together. But here's the simple answer. In summary, everything that exists comes from Krishna. Or it comes from a spiritual source. And so there's a spiritual quality or character to all things. And when the tongue is used in service to Krishna, the ear is used in service to Krishna, its spiritual quality is restored. There's a simple answer. But very elaborately discussed, very deeply philosophically discussed, but some of the purports are filled with references from the Vedas, the Upanishads and the Shrutis and so on. It testifies devotional service, because there is a connection between all things and its source of emanation, and the nature of that connection is simultaneously one and different. So we're emphasizing in devotional service its relationship with Krishna, but in recognizing at the same time Krishna is different. He's the object, and we're utilizing things in this world in service to him. And that's, if we follow the principle that most confidential knowledge of how to act in our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all spiritual, even utilizing things of this world because we're conditioned, and thus we can get our hands on, that our working senses can utilize, it can fully fix the mind upon Krishna and at the same time engage in our prescribed duties in a perfectly justifiable and satisfying way of spiritual realization. We're almost done. That's 4 through 6. And 7, 8, 9, 10. So those verses, Krishna is describing in 4 through 6 his relationship as the maintainer of creation. In 7, 8, 9, 10, he's describing his relationship with matter in the process of creation, his relationship with matter in the process of annihilation. In all phases of time and in all phases of existence, Krishna has this simultaneous oneness and difference relationship with all things. And there isn't a third thing. Prabhupada, it was really nice. He said, there are two things. Krishna and Krishnas, and there's not a third thing. Then he went on to say, there's no such thing as void. There's no void within the creation of God. There's void philosophy. There's no such thing. There's Krishna and there's Krishnas, and there's not a third thing. So even in annihilation, the energy is withdrawn. In creation, it's manifest. Vyakta, avyakta. And then there's his form that can be perceived through the eyes of love, and otherwise is avyaktamurti, his unmanifested form. So through devotional service, one can perceive, transcendentally perceive Krishna, through the purification process of devotional service and the eradication of misconceptions and so many other anomalies. So there's the first 10 verses of chapter 9. I don't know what you're going to do when you have your classes, maybe drill down on it a little bit more, because it's really wonderful. Krishna is preparing, as he promised Arjuna, he's preparing to take Arjuna, which means to take us, to the position of unmixed devotional service through the hearing process. There's, you know, that's the rope. It's the sound vibration. And hold on to the rope. That's the hearing process. And we'll go to Krishna, to the stage of unmixed devotional service, where karma and yoga and gyan are far away. Unmixed devotional service. Although we have inclinations and tendencies towards those things. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Like, you said that Krishna is inconceivable. Do we make an effort to understand that?
Through devotion, yes. Not through mental speculation? No. Our effort to understand him is through devotion, through hearing. And you how many times did Prabhupada say when lecturing, just try to understand? But not through the speculative processes of trying to understand. We use our reasoning faculty. We certainly engage our reasoning faculty in approaching knowledge of devotion to Krishna. But the reasoning faculty alone is inadequate. And we'll realize that if that's all that we rely upon. Yes, we try to understand. And it's when Krishna is ready to disclose himself to us, then it becomes. And he wants to disclose himself when someone is not envious. And with faith, with approaching, trying to understand with those qualifications through the hearing process. Anything else? Something else?
I just want, you summarized very nicely that the confidential is confidential knowledge is realizing that I'm spirit soul, and more confidential is understanding the relation between Param Brahma and.
Well, there's a distinction between the Supreme Soul and the individual soul. So there's some persons that don't understand that.
So I was relating it. And then most confidential is
emotional pure devotion. Acting in that relationship.
So I was relating it Abhideya, Sambandha, Prayati. We can characterize it.
Not exactly.
Confidential.
Close. But now it's not a one-to-one match. Abhideya is acting in the relationship. Prayojit is the fruit of that relationship. So the comparison that I made was the individual soul, supreme soul, and acting in the relationship with the supreme soul up to its fruition. So it's Abhideya and Prayojana is the final one. But there's an intermediate phase where Krishna is disclosing himself. Not exactly yet the process of devotional service, like chapter 4. He introduces many things about himself. He talked about himself. I'm like this. More confidential. And then act in the relationship. And the fullness of that relationship. So let's Abhideya and Prayojana together. And then, unmixed is also discussed, because there's Krishna in a very, very liberal way in this chapter 9 considers different categories of persons who we would not consider to be devotees in a very liberal, broad way. Krishna says, they're also my devotees. What's the verse? Ekatvena pratakvena bahudha vishvato mukham. Those who ekatvena pratakvena bahudha vishvato. So those who are worshipped ekatvam, they worship I am none different than the supreme. Of course, we're different than the supreme, but ekatvena pratakvena bahudha, and then the universal form, these are also my devotees. Of course, they have to connect with someone who's carrying Shuddha Bhakti to come to the stage of Shuddha Bhakti. Anyway, something else? Yes?
The non-envious is towards Lord. I don't understand non-envious. Is it towards Lord Sri Krishna or
yes,
like devotees?
Well, both. Why separate the two? Envy towards the devotees means envy towards Krishna. If envy towards Krishna is gone, there's no envy towards the devotees. If there's envy towards the devotees, there's envy towards Krishna. They're not separate. Yeah.
As I hear more about envy,
You want to hear more about it?
I get more confused about it. Like, what? Why should somebody be envious of Krishna?
Why should they? There isn't a good reason.
What envy are we talking about?
Well, the envy is, here's Prabhupada's characterization. I'm a citizen, and I see the king sitting on the throne. And I think, I'm going to sit on the throne. But there's a problem. There's somebody already sitting on the throne. So let me get rid of the person who's sitting on the throne so I can sit on the throne. That's envy towards the king. Now, envy of the living entity towards God. It's why should he be supreme? He's always at the center. It's always about him. Why not me? At least some of the time. He can be some of the time and I can be some of the time. It's a malady. It's a disease. It's unnatural. There isn't a good reason for it. But it exists. Disease exists. It's a disease of the soul. And primordial. You can't go back in time far enough to say, here's where it began. For those living entities in this world, it's dvesha. Raga dvesha sambhutena dvandva mohina bharata. But that's what it is. It's coveting the position of being the center. Being Purusha. Enjoy your Prakriti. I'm not Purusha, the enjoyer of Prakriti. I'm Prakriti. But I want to be Purusha. That's what it is. And it's a disease condition. There isn't good reason for it. It's dumb. Okay, everyone's happy. Or hungry. Or tired. Yeah.
We say there's Krishna and Krishnas. So only two things exist. So if we take the bad qualities like envy in us,
yeah.
How do we...
That cannot exist without the sanction of Krishna. Okay. Nothing can exist without the sanction of Krishna.
So they are also Krishnas.
There's also Krishnas. Now Krishna doesn't say, please take it. We say, we want it. Krishna says, please don't take it. I want it. It's like a child, isn't it? Okay.
So why doesn't Krishna keep that envy away from living in...
He wants to, but he doesn't deprive us of our free will. You're a parent? Has it ever happened that your child does something you don't want your child to do? Last time. So why don't you just deprive your child of their free will? Well, besides, it's not in our power to do that. Krishna doesn't cross that... two different ways. One is, the living entity is a fragmental part of the Supreme. So the Supreme has unlimited free will, so we also have free will. It's intrinsic to the soul. Free will means choose this or choose that. So why Krishna doesn't take away our free will? Why does Krishna have unlimited free will? Krishna shouldn't have free will either. Krishna has free will, and we have tiny free will, which means we can properly use it or misuse it. It's intrinsic to the soul. And the other answer is, if Krishna were to remove our free will, which is not just like it's conceptual, it's conceptually interesting, but it's not what a soul is. Soul is part of Krishna with free will. But it would mean there's no such thing as love. Because love is a voluntary act. but supposing it's not voluntary. You took away your volition. Then there's no love. But in the spiritual world, there's love. So Krishna doesn't take away our free will. It's voluntary. He invites us to surrender unto him, but we also have the freedom to not. He invites us to love him, but he doesn't break our arm. You love me or else. And there's no other else either. There's only one thing. Love me. That's not love. Yeah, he doesn't. Voluntary. So, voluntary means, there's the other option. No. Do children ever say no? Some children, that's their favorite word. Yes.
Maharaj, as you said that he didn't say, why did he create, you know, bad things?
He doesn't create bad things. Let's get the language straight. Everything that exists comes from Krishna. So the living entities who have free will desire independent enjoyment, which doesn't exist. Let's get that clear too. There's no such thing as happiness apart from Krishna. There's no such thing as something apart from Krishna. But they want something apart from Krishna. They want happiness apart from Krishna. They want it. They have free will. So Krishna creates an illusory situation where they think they can have happiness apart from Krishna. And in that happiness apart from Krishna illusion, there's the modes of nature. There's variety out there in the illusory world. And some of it's ignorance. It's all ignorance because it's separate from Krishna. It's pervasive ignorance. But there's, relative scales of it. And so Krishna sanctions it. Krishna sanctions it. It doesn't exist. Envy, like this other question, or people that do bad things to other people and so on. Crime. They're doing bad things to themselves. They're doing bad things to, because their consciousness is polluted and distorted. And then there's reactions for those bad things. And it's very complicated, very implicating and very complex. But it's a dream. Because it's not real. Ultimately, it's not real. So in that ultimately not real scenario, there's the perverted reflection of the real. And that's where the bad things come from, is the perverted reflection of the real. Acting as imitation purushas. I'm the enjoyer of matter. Now, according to the modes of nature, my idea of enjoyment matter looks like this. Another one looks like that. Another one was something else, according to the modes of nature. And then, the interaction of both living entities and material nature and free wills and clashing, and it's really a free-for-all with laws. But Krishna sanctions it, but that's not what he wants. He sanctions it. He's the cheater of cheats. Where does the thief get the understanding of how to steal? Prabhupada explains. He's sneaking around at night. Uh-oh, here comes somebody. Super soul. Okay, now they're gone. Now you can go. The cat. He gives this example. The cat waits till the housewife leaves the kitchen. The cat jumps up on the table and drinks the milk. Intelligence comes from super soul, of how to do things, because there's a desire to enjoy, and then there's an embodiment according to the modes of nature and karma, guna and karma. It's very complex. It's sanctioned by Krishna. It doesn't exist apart from Krishna, but it's not Krishna. Krishna's bad because he sanctions people to do bad things. They hurt other people, so God's bad. He doesn't want that. Just like a state doesn't want a prison house and prisoners in the prison house. They don't want it. But they have to have a prison because people are going to break the law. And the innocent people need protection from the lawbreakers. So, you know, the solution is just take away their free will. No more free will. That's it. Have a decree. The Chinese government, this is Huffington, is it Huffington Post? Huffington Post? Just yesterday, it was published in Huffington Post that the Chinese government passed a law that goes into effect next month that unless the Chinese government gives sanction, you can't reincarnate. It has to be government sanctioned reincarnation. And it has to do with Dalai Lama, because they, you know, they got it, they took Tibet and did the whole thing. The Dalai Lama left and residing in India. So the law of progenitor is that Dalai Lama either will, his son will become the next Dalai Lama, or he will select the Dalai Lama, and he will incarnate and become a future Dalai Lama. A, B, and C. Chinese government knows that. He's very old. So he's going to select a successor and then reincarnate. So they passed a law saying you can't reincarnate unless it passes the approval of the Chinese government. Pretty cool, huh? That's called, that, you know, they're taking the position of God. They're eighth. Anyway, you know the whole thing. So, yes.
Maharaj, as you said, that isn't it a good situation to be in, that taking away the free will, like from the child, you know, if he is suffering from sore throat or something, we just take away the ice cream, you know, you're not even seeing the ice cream, you know, so that you don't have it.
So Krishna does that with us too, doesn't he? You want da 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 da? Gone. Doesn't it happen? It happens. He's not depriving the free will. He may deprive the object, but not the free will. Mm-hmm. According to guna and karma, we may not get what we want. We get what we don't want instead of what we want. We want sukha and we get dukkha. It's the design of the place. We get dukkha instead of sukha. He's not depriving our free will, he's depriving the object and, you know, the spirit of sense gratification. So the lesson behind it is, whoa, yeah, I got the wrong program. I should delete this program and get the new program. Bhakti program. But yeah, like, you got to keep this fruit of activities program installed on your hard drive. And it runs everything. Okay, we're done. Thank you all very much. Shiva Prabhupada. Peace.
Yeah. Yeah.